Okay, so this is a topic which is endless, and we could have definitely 8 or 9 sessions on the topic of chinuch. I'm just doing 4 main points on the topic of chinuch, which I feel are primary. I wanted to share. I'm happy to take questions at the end, and later on in life, if anyone wants to be in contact one-on-one, I'm happy to speak on the phone, so or in person. So the first thing I want to address is the way that parents view their children and the way that the children view their parents. How does each side view the relationship? So a healthy way for parents to view the relationship with their children is the following way. There was a child story. There was a child who was abandoned at birth. And the counselor took him under the wing and was looking for someone to take care of this child. And there's a very, very long, complicated procedure to find who would be the right parents to take care of this child. And they send social workers over and they check out the home, and the parents have to go through courses to ensure that they understand deeply the how to raise children. They see there's no violence in the home and there's proper emotional. They do tests on a computer first, and then they do tests face to face. There's financial checks. And they see where this child would fit into the dynamics of the family to make sure, like, if they have another child too close in age, they won't approve that family. Because it has to be that there's room for this child. They see, the social workers come and see the room. Where will the child's room be? What will his bed be? And they give a barrage of questions to the parents. What will you do in this situation, that situation? Even when the parents do get approval, then there's a lot of follow-up work where they have to check in every week. Either a social worker comes to them, or they have to go to a social worker, and they have to do follow-up work to ensure they're taking care of the child properly, because this child was entrusted to the government, who has to ensure that it's getting the best parents for this child. So they ensure that it will be family who will love them and care for them and have all the needs and the makeup to take care of this child very well. And only then, after like 2 years of fostering, they see that the parents are successful in their mission, then they give approval to hand over the child fully, and at that point the child's able to take on the family name of the family who's hosting them. That family feel they're tzaddikim. They feel so righteous. They feel, we have taken this baby in. And they feel, this child is so underprivileged, we are going to do everything that we can to ensure this child never feels lacking. And they give the child everything, they take care of the child. The child's naughty, they're like, they can handle it, they ride with it, like, you know what this child would have had otherwise, and they feel super righteous, not in an arrogant way, but in a way of, we're doing Hashem's work. We're raising this child who otherwise would have been abandoned. And we were the ones chosen to take care of this child. So say the foster parents. Rachel, but Or Yehudit, came down into the world, and just before Hashem came into the world, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did the same work as the government. He took his team of angelic social workers, and he came into our home, and he looked around and he said, is Moria going to be a good older sister? And do they have enough space in their house? And is the financial situation, what about the emotional situation of the family? Like, is this going to be a good home for this baby? Now, every home is a different home. Every neshama that comes to the world is a different neshama. They don't check the same things as the social workers check. They don't check, is it going to be comfortable, I'm pampered, and is it going to be emotionally stable? They check for the neshama of this child. Is this going to be the perfect environment with the tests and with the privileges that this child will be able to grow up in, that will enable this child to become who he can become? Sometimes it seems like no. Sometimes it seems overwhelming. That Kodesh Baruch Hu never places a person in a situation which they can't overcome. This is the Gemara in the beginning of Avodah Zarah says, Lo ba b'tzimunia al briyotav. Meaning it could be that a person will be given a more difficult challenge, and that's the role he has to play in that family. Could be there's a family, there's a lot of fighting, a lot of bickering, a lot of criticism, and Hashem will bring that child in, and that will be that child's role. And his goal is just to be the best he can be in that family. His goal is not to be perfect. His goal is to be the best he can be in that given situation. So when Rachel comes into the world, is my view a view of, okay, number 8, done this already a few times, I have to pay attention, it's not so exciting. There's an amazing, amazing story, which I quoted once on a Shabbaton, and it's worth quoting again in this context, of Dr. Chana Katan. Dr. Chana Katan is the leading religious gynecologist in Israel. She was once doing a scan on a pregnant woman whose husband was there. And they did a scan and they could see the baby's heart beating. It was already advanced age, they could see the heart beating, everything was healthy, Baruch Hashem. And the father started getting very emotional. And she saw that this family looked elder. They looked maybe in their late 50s, maybe early 60s. And she thought, this must be a couple. She could see how emotional the husband was getting. This must be a couple who've been waiting for a long time. And she said, you seem excited, you're getting emotional. So the husband says, I've been waiting for this child for over 20 years. So she said, wow, let me just check the records. She goes to the records and she sees they have 13 children. This is going to be number 14. So she says, but it says here you have 13 children. He says, yes, but for this child, I've been waiting for 20 years. That story touched me so deeply. You get this feeling, okay, another child, another child, another child. But this child was designed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Shemayim, with the Malachim being their social workers, to go into this family and come down at this time. Before it came into the world, it wasn't relevant to come into the world. This is the time Hashem chose. This is the family Hashem chose. Hashem checked us out very carefully before He decided to give us the opportunity to have this child. And in the same way as the family feels, of the adopted child feels, we were chosen. There were many people who could have had this child, but we were the ones chosen to take care of this child. We are responsible. The whole country is behind us. We have to do the best to ensure this child will feel comfortable and happy and have everything he needs. Because this is a special child who we were chosen to take care of. So every child that is born, you have that same emotion. I've been waiting 20 years for this child. Or in my case, I'm waiting 17 years for this child. This child I'm waiting 17 years for. And that gives a sense of, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given me and my wife a unique mission to take care of this particular child. It's not like another one of the kids. This is a special, unique neshama that's coming to the world. And Hashem has chosen us as foster parents. That without us, no one else will take care of this child. This child is abandoned without us. And if we're not giving this child the love that they need, then this child has been abandoned. But we were the ones chosen to give this child this love. That is a healthy perspective for parents to have regarding children. Now, what is their perspective that children have regarding their parents? This is the one they don't choose to have, it's just automatic. The Gemara says, Shalosha shutafim ba'adam. There are three partners in the makeup of man. The first two are his parents who he meets straight away. The third one he only discovers later on in life. But the child almost innately knows that there are three partners. And the child doesn't know how to relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is infinite and esoteric and not tangible in any way. So the father needs the child needs an image through which he can relate to Hashem. And the parents take the role of the image of Hashem. This is an enormous responsibility. And in the Torah, many times we're called Bini Bechori Yisrael, Banim Atem LaHashem Elokechem. Hashem gives the mashal of father and child for us to have that relationship with us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. One of the Baalei Musar once wrote, why did Hashem make a situation of parents and children? Why didn't He make it like Adam HaRishon, born into the world age 20? And next generation, born into the world age 20. Why does it have to be? Or it could be like seeds of the ground, where like another plant, like, you know, the wind blows a seed and it comes out of the ground over there. It doesn't know who his parent was, it doesn't have a relationship with his parent. Even an animal is born, and then it depends what type of animal, but it could be pretty independent very quickly and then move on its own way. It doesn't have a relationship with the parent in the same way. Why didn't Hashem make each of us independent like He did Adam HaRishon? So we wouldn't have a recognition that we have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu if we wouldn't have a relationship with the father and son. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu designed it in such a way that we know that we're helpless and totally dependent without our parents initially. And then we look up to them like a god initially. And when we learn the Torah, Avinu Malkeinu, Avinu Shebashamayim, what imagery are we using? We're using the imagery of our parents, which Let's not talk about the kids for a second, let's talk about the parents. Us as future parents or current parents, that's an enormous responsibility that a Kodesh Baruch was placed on us to know that your child will relate to Hashem the way that you relate to him. And if you relate to your child in an emotionally healthy way, and in a true way, a way that reflects Torah values, your child will be set up to have a good relationship with Hashem. And if not, then maybe there'll be a good Rebbe that will come along and will fulfill that role. There's hope. But it's supposed to come through you. The Pasuk says in Devarim, V'yadata im levavecha, ki kasher yaser ish et beno, Hashem elokecha miyasreka. That's a scary Pasuk. You know in your hearts that in the same way as a man rebukes his son, Hashem rebukes you. What was Hashem intending with that Pasuk? What did he mean to say? Did he mean to say there's a type of a parent who his honor is at stake? And if the child doesn't live up to his expectations, then the parent starts to get angry. And then the parent shouts at the child. And the child knows he better not get his dad angry because, or his mother angry, because if he gets one of his parents angry, then he's going to be in trouble. And he knows, the child knows, that that being in trouble is not for his benefit. He knows that nothing positive is going to come out of it. It's the parent's honor at stake. And the father's honor is more important than the child's emotional well-being. So when he reads that child in that family, who knows don't get your dad angry because he's going to hit you or scream at you, because his honor is going to be tested. Then when he reads this pasuk, this is what he's going to read. He's going to say, you know deeply in your heart, in the same way as a father rebukes his child because all he cares about is his own honor, he doesn't love you, he doesn't care about you inherently, it's just about him. And the best thing you could ever do is just to avoid him and stay out of the way so you don't get in trouble. Kein Hashem Elokecha Miyasreka. That's what Hashem does too. That's going to be a terrible lesson. For Hashem, it was obvious that the way you're raising your child was in line with Torah values. It was obvious that the way you're going to rebuke your child is from a place of deep love and affection, and only where it's productive and positive. And therefore Hashem was confident to write this pasuk. He was confident to say, you know deeply in your heart, just like your parents, when they rebuke you, they care for you and they love you, and you know that deeply. So too, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when He sends you hardships, you know deeply that it's coming from a place of love and that He cares. The Ramban writes that Hashem loves us and He cares for us, and therefore that's the message that we have to reflect back to our parents. Point number one of Chinuch. Children, parents' relationship with children should be ones of, without me, these children are abandoned. I care for each child as if it's my only child, and I'm investing everything I can to give them benefit. Children's way of viewing parents is like God. Until the parents mess up and they realize, oh, I guess God's not perfect either. God makes mistakes, God doesn't really care, God doesn't love me. If the parents do a good job of being normal and being human, but caring, everything emanates from love, the children sense deeply that their parents love them, then even if they rebuke them, they know that the parents are doing it from a good place, and they will have a good imagery, a true imagery, of what their relationship with Hashem should be like. So you have to be careful. I'll give you just a mashal. This is not about parenting. This is about chinuch. Not from parents, but from schools usually. But just to teach a similar principle. Schools want to encourage kids to do well in tests. So they make competitions. How do you show a child that he succeeded in a competition? You give a prize. There's a technical issue which the prizes cost a lot of money. So what do the schools do? They do a raffle, which is a good idea because then they only have to buy one prize. And everyone thinks they have a potential chance of winning the prize. So they all work hard, they all get a raffle ticket. Then, at the end of the day, there's a raffle and someone wins the prize and everyone wins. The children have learned well, the parents are happy the children are learning well, the school didn't have to invest so much money because they're not buying a present for every child, only for one child, and everyone goes away happy. Well, the child that goes with the present goes away happy. All the other children, this is the message they take. You put in a lot of effort, you work really, really hard, and then it's totally random, and you might not get any benefit from it at all. That's not a true message. That's not true. That's not the truth of Torah. The truth of Torah is, however much effort you put in, you will get reward for, even if you didn't understand any of it. And there's nothing random. So that message is teaching them that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to work really hard. He may or may not give you a reward. It's very random, the whole system, if you'll get rewarded or not. That's the lesson that kids take away. So the educators say to themselves, yes, but it's worth it because look, they're learning. But it's not worth it. Because if the kids come away with a lesson of it's not worth it, that's the lesson they come away with. If they feel I put in a lot of effort for this and it wasn't worth, that's the feeling the child has, then maybe technically they learned more Torah, but long term their relationship with Torah will be one of, I wish I wouldn't have done that. It was a waste of time. It's not worth doing it the next time, and definitely not long term, because what reward am I going to get? So you've taught them two things. You've taught them the value of hard work and that it's worthless. That's what you've taught them. Maybe if you're lucky, they'll have learned the inherent value of Torah. And then they'll find a sweetness in learning. And then they'll say, okay, I don't need the prize. And then the learning will live of its own, it will grow its own legs and it will be independent. That will be a good situation. And if you can educate children healthily, then that's the place you're reaching to. But a much better solution is to give small prizes to everyone. It maybe cost a bit more money, but everyone knows that as long as they put in the effort to work, then they are rewarded for the effort they put in. It's not as exciting, there's no big raffle, then. Okay, but it's true. You have to ensure that the message underlying the chinuch is a true Torah message. It's true with what you're reflecting of the Kodesh Baruch Hu's values. If it's not true, that's the message they're going to get. And they'll come away with a feeling of, I wish I wouldn't have done it. So back to our topic of a parent and a teacher. If a parent or a teacher are not reflecting a true Torah value, meaning they're educating a child with a sense of their honor at stake, the child will get that message about a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And Chas V'Shalom, they could come away with a very warped, skewed mindset of Hashem being out to get you, and you have to like please him so that you don't get punished. And your whole relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu could end up being, he's like a nasty, mean, evil, baddie, which if I don't follow these rules, I'm going to get in trouble. And that will be their issue. And they might serve Hashem their whole lives. And I have to fulfill mitzvahs till the end of their days. But it will be with a no healthy, positive, true relationship with Hashem. And that responsibility is on the parents and on the Rebbe and on the teachers, but primarily on the parents, to give that initial view of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. And that's the mindset that the parents have to go in with. Recognition of what their children are viewing them to be and living up to that. So that was point number one. Point number two is based on Ravolbi. Ravolbi, both in Ali Shor and in a separate book, Kuntres, that he has called Zuriyah v'Biniyah b'Chinuch, teaches the following idea. There are two processes that go through life and it expresses itself in many areas. One is in Shmona Esrei. We talk about the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash in two different ways. One way we talk about it in building, boneh Yerushalayim, and one way we talk about it in flourishing, blossoming, et tzemach David, tzemach as a plant. There's two different processes, both of which create something, but in very different ways. Building is block by block, you've made a plan, you're working the whole thing out, according to the architect's plan is how the building goes. Planting is, you don't know exactly how it's going to go. It has a nature of its own. It's built in the nature. And how it will develop, it will develop. You need to ensure that it has the right setting, surrounding, enough sun, enough water, enough earth, but it does it independently. For the Geulah to come, we need two separate things to be taking place. One is binyan, and one is tzemicha. We have to be doing our part. We have to be making a home in Eretz Yisrael, learning Torah in Eretz Yisrael, building Torah institutions in Eretz Yisrael, moving here, building the land, showing Kodesh Baruch Hu that this is important to us. We're part of the Geula. We're involved in the Geula. We're putting down our blocks. But it's a process that will happen when Kodesh Baruch Hu determines. It's not in our hands entirely. There are different eras where Hashem will say, now is a more fitting era, now is a less fitting era, now we'll take a big jump forward, now you're going to wait for 40 years and nothing's going to happen. It's like a plant. You may plant a tree that won't have fruits for 13, 14 years, suddenly blossoming, flourishing, lots of fruits. Unpredictable. The nature of the Geula has an element which we can be involved in, and we have to be involved in, putting down the blocks, and an element which is totally independent, which has a nature of its own. The opening phrase of Masilas Yesharim, Yesod, and then Shoresh. Yesod HaChassidus, V'Shoresh HaAvodah. Those are the two words again. Yesod is a foundation that you put down in order to build a building. When we talk about chassidus, when you're beginning, all at the beginning, you have to know that for you to reach a level of chassidus, which is something which you understand halacha, you know what's halacha and what's a chumrah, you know where you're holding, and you're ready to take on the next step to come close to Hashem, that's building. You need to have a foundation. You sowed hachasidus. When it comes to avodah, avodah is Hashem, it's something very natural. You have to develop it. Any given time, a particular middle may bother you more. A different time, a different middle bother you. Yes, different situation you'll be in life. You grow, you develop. Avodas Hashem is something which you can't have very strict. Otherwise, there would be much more clear books on Avodas Hashem. There aren't. They're so broad and general because it's very, very personal, individual. So you have the word you sowed and you have the word sharish. Sharish is a root. A root. It grows by itself. In Chinuch, it's the same. There are two elements working concurrently in Chinuch. On the one hand, we have the concept of the mission of when he reaches age 5, he learns Psukim. When he reaches age 10, he learns Mishnayos. When he reaches age 15, he learns Gemara. There's very clear stages. When the child reaches the age of he's able to speak, you teach him Torah, Tzivar, and Moshe. There's very clear guidelines. But at the same time, Chanoch l'nar al pi darko. Every child has his own very unique personal. Let's talk about going to an extreme of either extreme. Extreme family number one. There are rules, regulations, it's run like an army. Every child is the same because they're being raised in the same family. And therefore they all have to do what the parents have laid down to be the way this family works. They will all learn the same instrument, they will all do the same diploma, they will have to get the same grades, very, very high grades. They'll have to dress a certain way which the parents will buy accordingly to what the parents' fashion is and what the parents decide. They will play with the friends. Everything is built very clearly. And what if a child happens to suit them, which is the same percentage of chance of the world being created, then they may grow up healthy. But maybe this child is not exactly the way that the parents determine and they have a nature of their own, then they're going to be in trouble. And one of two things will happen. Either they will explode or they will implode. Either they will rebel and they'll say, I'm not doing that, and they'll be fighting and they'll be shouting and they'll be rebelling, and then the very fact that there's a fight about it makes it much worse. Because the parents say that you have to wear a white shirt and the child wants to wear a blue shirt. A blue shirt is off the derech. The shoes are too pointy. They're too pointy. No, you have to have more round or the other way around. So the child says, well, I'm anyway off the derech. Because I'm wearing a blue shirt and two pointy shoes, so I'm off the derech, so I'll go and be off the derech properly. The very, very response of the parents of has to fit into the mold is what pushes them out of the mold more and then totally off. True story that Revolvi tells of a well-known tzaddik. He doesn't say who it is, but you get the impression that if he would say his name, you would know him. A well-known tzaddik brought his son to his yeshiva, Be'er Yaakov, and he was the mashgiach of the yeshiva. And the father says, the tzaddik says, he's a little shy. He's a little shy. Okay. Comes to the yeshiva, becomes a Talmud of the yeshiva, doesn't speak. Just doesn't speak. Doesn't speak to anyone. Just doesn't speak. No, not doesn't open his heart. Doesn't speak. Eventually, it comes out. The father was so set on this son being the next Gadol Hador that he made a very, very strict regimen of his learning. In school and then out of school. He wasn't allowed to play with friends. He wasn't allowed to leave the house because he was destined to be the next Gadol Hador. And he became so angry with his father. He hated his father so much for not enabling him to have a childhood that he just stopped. He imploded. He didn't explode. He didn't rebel. It wasn't appropriate in that setting to explode. He just shut down. Totally shut down. Stopped functioning. No emotions. No relationship. No interest, no enthusiasm, nothing. They worked with him in the yeshiva a lot. Eventually, he also left the path of Torah. Now, this tzaddik is saying, what could I do? I did my best. And he really did his best with what he thought was the best thing to do. He had very good intentions. He had intentions to raise his child along the path of Torah. But you have to have the balance. If you only do binyan, if you only have structure, rigid forms, molds, which everyone has to fit into, the moment someone doesn't fit into that, then they're going to break. They'll either rebel openly and be fighting, or they'll just stop functioning and they will close, shut down within. That's option number one. Unhealthy. Option number two is, there's no rules, there's no regulations, everyone does whatever they want, and there's no guidelines at all. Now, I'm much more leaning on that side. I'm very into that side. I'm extremely hands-off parent. However, when the parent comes for, when the child comes for guidance, or if the child's doing something which you can see is going to be dangerous, are you there for them? The child has to have a sense of, you're letting him develop, but you're giving him enough structure that he's not insecure. If a child gets a feeling of, even if I would do bad things, my parents wouldn't care. Even if I would rebel, my parents wouldn't care. So he doesn't have that same need to rebel like that side, but he has no meaning in life, and he has no care for anything of value. Everything is meaningless. He's been instructed that there's nothing of value. That's tzmicha. But it's not growing a tree, it's growing weeds. Because it's the water's raining down, and what's going to grow there? Thorns and thistles are going to grow. Because you're not taking sure there's enough grass, you're not pruning, you're not getting rid of the thorns. You're enabling them to grow wild. A child who grows up wild, without structure from his parents, will be upset with his parents long term. The parents think they're doing him a favor, let him be free, independent, do his own thing. The child will say, and he would say this because he doesn't have the ability to say this at that stage in life, he'll say, why didn't you get me to sit down and do homework? Why didn't you tell me that behavior was inappropriate? Now I'm struggling because I don't have good relations with people because I'm always being rude to them or cynical or sarcastic, and no one ever told me that that's not pleasurable for other people to hear. No one gave me social skills. No one told me the importance of Torah. I was never given that. So you have these two extremes. On the one extreme, mold, too fixed. On the other extreme, do whatever you want. It's totally free. There's no rules. There's a healthy balance of binyan and zriya. On the one hand, you're building. On the other hand, you are allowing it naturally to develop. If you have those, where you have the structure around, a child knows he's protected. He knows he won't fall. He can feel secure, then he can develop himself independently. Then he can discover who he is. That's principle number two. Binyan and Zriya. Healthy balance between giving the child guidelines and being hands-off to let their inherent self come out. Their unique nature develop itself. I'm still a very young parent, but I can clearly say that we've raised our kids all the same way, all in the same environment, and they have totally different personalities. And it's amazing, as Rachel is born, she's now a week and a half old, you say, like, what does Hashem have in store for us now? Like, who is this going to be? So what we will do is, we will provide a Torah environment, we will give her physical needs, and she'll tell us who she is. She'll discover who she is in a very natural way. We'll be very supportive of it. We're very encouraging of it. We'll give her room to do where she naturally goes to. It's mashallah davadomim. If you have a mold, and it's made of hard plastic, and then you pour in the dough, then it will come out the shape of, let's say it's, you know, like a gingerbread man. It will come out the shape of the gingerbread man. Exactly that shape. But if you have one which is very, it's got structure, it's got a mold, it's not going to just like, the dough is not going to splatter all over. It's not going to become so thin that there's nothing there. But at the same time, it doesn't have a fixed shape. Anyone who comes along can reform it, can reshape it, and you can create your own shape. You've made a new creation. It's exciting. You can make your own shape of the cookie cutter dough. Then you can style it however you want, and then you pour in and then it becomes that. That's what happens. The parents are just like watching what's happening. The parents' role is not to get in the way. It's to provide values, provide physical needs, allow that child to develop into who they naturally are. That's chanoch lenar al pi darko. It's chanoch. You're doing chinuch. You're not abandoning. You're doing chinuch al pi darko in a way that's fitting for him. That's principle number two. Parents finding a healthy balance between them not imposing who they are on the children, allowing the children to become who the children are, but at the same time giving enough structure, security, guidelines that don't impose upon the child, but do give the child that freedom to develop who he is. Principle number three, tefillah. Not to be taken lightly at all. People say tefillah is like sweet. It's not sweet. This is the bread and butter of raising children. This is the behind what everything is in raising the children. There's an amazing story about, I forgot his name, but I can look it up again. There was a Jew who was in the first Knesset. And he was a member of the party with Ben Gurion. Have I told the story before? It's worth telling again if I have. He was the Sar HaChinuch, Minister of Education, in the first ever Knesset. His wife, he was not religious. His wife was not religious. His child grew up to be a Talmud Chacham who opened many Torah institutions, chinuch, like high schools, elementary schools, in Me'er Sha'arim. When people asked the son, like, what happened? Where did you come from? Like, how did you become who you became? So this is what the son attributed. There could be many things, but the son attributed it to the following idea. His mother was not religious, but she brought with her from Europe lighting candles on Friday night. And then breaking Shabbos, but lighting candles on Friday night. And she also brought him with her from Europe that when you light candles, you also daven for your children. So she used to stand by the candles and daven every Friday night, and she would say the name of each child. And what would she say? So she knew you daven for them to be great. So who's great? Who is her vision, paradigm, paragon of greatness? Her husband would come up every day. This is the first years of the Knesset. It's the beginning of the state. The biggest genius in his world was Ben Gurion. This was a man who's founding a state from nothing. So she would daven every Friday night. Please God, may my child grow up to be like Ben Gurion. That was her prayer, the candles Friday night. One day, there was a meeting between Ben Gurion and the Chazon Ish. It's a very famous meeting. Many interesting stories came out of that meeting. But here's another story that came out of it. The Chazon Ish and Ben Gurion met. The Ben Gurion comes back to the Knesset. Everyone's waiting to hear what's going to be from this meeting. Because Ben Gurion wasn't Haredi. He comes back and he says, he said, what do you have to say? He says, the Chazon Ish, who Gaon, who Pashut Gaon. The master of, the minister of Chinuch, of education, comes back and says, you know what happened in Knesset today? The story is, what happened in Knesset today? He says, Ben Gurion met the Chazon Ish, and you know what he said? He said, he's a Gaon. Now this woman was a clever woman. She knows how to make a Kal Vachomer. If Ben Gurion is a Gaon, and Ben Gurion says the Chazon Ish is a Gaon, so then Kal Vachomer, I should daven for him. From that day on, when she lit her candles, she would say, please God, may my child grow up to be like the Chazon Ish. She never met the Chazon Ish. She doesn't even know the Chazon Ish's name. What does each stand for? Doesn't matter. Whoever he is, someone out there who's Ben Gurion held and holds in high esteem. That's who he is for her. But she davened the words, please God, may my child grow up to be like the Chazon Ish. Prayer from someone who isn't keeping Shabbos, who doesn't even know really what she's davening for. But this Jew, he attributed his success in becoming Gadol B'Torah to his mother's prayers. And Revolbi said the same thing. He said his mother used to daven for him about 10 times a day, and he would hear his mother davening. And he said, if anything ever happened to me, it's because of that. The Chofetz Chaim said the same thing. When the Chofetz Chaim's mother passed away, he took her to Tehillim, and all the pages were bent. And he looked at it and he said, this is the reason I became who I became. My mother used to put the Tehillim over her eyes and she would cry that Yisrael Meir would become a Gadol B'Torah. I have a personal story about myself as well. My mother passed away when I was 7. I don't remember her so much. But I have some of her things that she left over. One of the things that I found that what she left over is a letter that she wrote to one of the Gadoli Hador asking her son, I'm her only son, should have great enthusiasm for Torah. That's what she writes for. I don't know where it comes from, but there's a mother, if she wrote the Lador, I presume she prayed as well. And that's the one thing she asked for. Great enthusiasm in Torah. I don't know who I am, but that's one thing which is very natural. Nothing I ever worked on. Just built in. I must read it again. I read it at my daughter's bat mitzvah the last time I read it. My oldest daughter's bat mitzvah, I read it out there. But that's my mother's prayer. The one thing I know that she said, that her child should grow up to have great enthusiasm in Torah. And also there's a very well-known Breslov Rebbe today. He's written many books, maybe you've read them, Garden of Emuna. And he was not religious after the army. And his mother used to daven day and night that he would return to Yiddishkeit. And he tells his whole story, and it was to do with the army, and to do with, it's in the book, it was to do with the army, and to do with people dying, and to do with, And then he thought to himself, my mother is davening I should be frum. How can I let her down? And he became frum. And today he's one of the biggest mashpiyim, mekarvim in Eretz Yisrael. Rav Arush. He attributed to his mother's prayers to him. The prayer could not be taken lightly at all. You don't have to wait till your kids are born. You can daven now. But when you will have children, that they should be like that. The Chofetz Chaim writes halacha, and he gave the nusach. The Chofetz Chaim writes it as a halacha, and he gives a nusach. This is his nusach. Yihiro tzom lefanecha adonai Eloheinu v'revoteinu. Shetzeitzeinu. Betzeitzei kolam chay Yisrael. Yiyu lomdei Torah. Betzadikim. Ubaalim midos tovus. That's the nusach of the Chofetz Chaim in the book Mishneh Berurah. Halachic Sefer. I say that nusach every day, and I include the names of all of my children in it. Tzeitzeinu, and I list all my children. Tefillah should not be taken lightly. One Torah source that the tefillah shouldn't be taken lightly is the Gemara Makos Daf Yud Aleph. The Gemara says that the Kohen Gadol was responsible for those who killed by mistake and they were sent away to exile. And the mothers of the Kohane Gadolim would prepare food for those in exile so that they wouldn't curse that the Kohen Gadol should die. Tama de lo matzlu. Ha matzlu mighty. So the Gemara Makkah says, the reason she would make them food is so that they wouldn't pray. Meaning if they would pray, then their prayers would be answered. And the Kohen Gadol would die. V'hakatzir, k'tzipor le'nud lidror le'of, ken kelat chinam al tavo, lo tavo. But once again, it says in the Gemara, in Pasuk and Mishlei, that if a person curses falsely, baselessly, doesn't have any basis to the curse, then it won't affect, says the Pasuk and Mishlei. So if they're cursing, they want to go free, they're cursing the Kohen Gadol, may he die so we can go free. It won't have any basis. It won't have any effect. So why did the mothers of the Kohen Gadol have to pray, provide food? Ahu Saba Mafrika Derava Shmieli Shayalehen Levakesh Rachamim Al Doran Velo Bikshu. They are responsible. It's not a baseless curse. They were responsible for that murder taking place by mistake. Because the Kohen Gadol who is responsible for Am Yisrael, he's been given a position where he's responsible for the nation. He has to be praying daily that no takalot should take place. No mistakes should happen. Now, we have the nusach of what the Kohen Gadol would say when he would go into the Beit HaMikdash on Yom Kippur. It doesn't include that. Meaning it was so obvious that that's what he had to say. That was like built in. Muvan me'elav. That if he's the Kohen Gadol and those are his responsibility, he'll be davening that no mistakes like that would happen. That no one would be killed by mistake. It was so obvious that if Chas Hashem, a person would curse him, it would take effect. Because it was true. It was his responsibility. Because prayer makes a difference. Because prayer is what gives that power, what gives that strength. For the good, and if not, then leaves them abandoned. Hayalehem levakesh rachamim al doran velo bikshu. We maybe don't have the responsibility to pray for our entire generation because we're not a Kohen Gadol. But we do have the responsibility to pray for those who are under our responsibility. So a parent of his child, a rebbe for his talmidim, has a responsibility not just to learn, not just to teach, but to pray they will be successful. And you don't have to wait till the children are born for this. You can pray that you will be zochet to have children and the nature of how those children will be. There's a tefillah by the Shla, which is commonly said on Erev Rosh Chodesh Sivan. Because Sivan is the month the Torah is given, and the main prayer that the parents pray is the prayer that their children will follow the path of Torah. And therefore this prayer is said then, you don't have to wait on them. In the Hebrew version of the Art Scroll, the Hebrew Israel version of the Art Scroll, the blue one, it has that prayer in the back. It has the prayer of the Shla, davening for your children. The Chazon Ish also has a prayer that he composed for people to say for their children. You can buy the book Aneni, which has numerous prayers for the people who say their children, and you don't have to wait till the children are born. You can start praying already now. And then by the time the children are born, you've already invested a lot. They'll turn out well. That was point number three, the importance of praying for your children. Point number four, and then I'll link that to point number five, is the importance of learning about parenting. Most parents presume it's something that comes to you naturally. It's something which is built in. I don't have to learn how to breathe. I just know how to breathe. I know that, I understand that I have to learn how to take a test to drive, because driving, you're putting people's lives in danger. You're driving fast, you could crash, I understand that. You could put people's physical lives in danger if you don't know how to drive well. If you don't know how to parent well, you're putting the emotional and spiritual lives of the children in danger. And the same way is that it's obvious that if you want to work in any particular industry, you have to be well experienced in this area. It should be obvious that if you wish to raise children, you should be well experienced in the ways of chinuch. What I'm saying now is extremely harsh, and please forgive me. Are parents responsible for how their children grow up? Do they take the blame if their kids come out wrong? It depends. If the parents did all they knew to do, they learned what they could learn on the topic, they took advice in areas they could take advice, and with the knowledge that they have at any given time, which they can have at any given time, they do the best they can do, then even if the child follows a very different path to them, they're not held accountable at all. Kodesh Baruch Hu judges you by your input, by your effort, by your investment, and Kodesh Baruch Hu will determine. We learned that from Menashe, Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu didn't want to have a child because his child was going to follow the path of, not follow the path of Torah. Hashem said, that's none of your business. So he said, okay, but put in maximum effort. And he married Yishayahu's daughter. Maybe the merit of Yishayahu and the merit of Chizkiyahu together will work. Put in maximum effort. If you put in maximum effort, you've done your part. HaKadosh Baruch Hu determined this child is not to follow the path of Torah. That's out of your hand. So if a parent put in the maximum effort that they can, with the knowledge that they have at any given time, maybe they didn't know something, maybe they didn't have access to it, it's fine, they're not held accountable. But with any knowledge they have at any given time, they put in the effort to learn, understand, and do their best, it's not their responsibility. However, if parents don't care about the topic of chinuch, and they say, my parents raised me without reading chinuch books, I will raise my children without chinuch books. And you ask them, are you happy with the way your parents raised you? Not so much. I'm actually very angry with my parents for a lot of things they did. So, do you want to raise your children the same way? No, I'm not going to make those mistakes. They do the exact same mistakes. They don't know any other way to machanech. They only know their way. The way they were raised. They hate it, but it's familiar. So they go with what's familiar. And they raise their children the same thing they did. And there's this expression, you're relating to your kids the same way your mother did. And you always say how you hated that. Said, and I hate myself for it. But what other way is there? That's the only way there is. A person is held accountable for the way their children turn out if they don't learn about chinuch and raise their children the way that they could have learned how to raise. To put an effort to understand the topic of how to raise a child. Now the principles are pretty simple and pretty straightforward. They're not over the moon. You could read two or three books and get the major principles pretty much straightforward. It takes a lot of practice, a lot of trial and error, but that's fine. You can make lots of mistakes. There's no problem with making mistakes. If the children see that you basically love them, you basically care for them, you do lots of wrong things, they'll be fine. They'll be totally fine. But if the children feel that there's a hefkerus or there's a strictness where it's not that the parents really care for them or love them and there's no real rules that are working here, then the children will suffer. And they will blame their parents for it. And their parents are to blame. If the parents could have, and I'm not talking about here where parents have emotional traumas of their own, and they went through things that need real therapy to go through. I'm talking about people who could learn the topic and don't care to. That's the category that I'm putting in this box. If it's people who weren't able to learn the topic because they didn't have access to it or they weren't in the emotional state to, that's a different story entirely. But people who could have learned it but just didn't think it was very valuable or very important, and therefore they didn't put in the efforts to, then it is their responsibility. And therefore, do not view chinuch as something that comes automatically. It does not come automatically. If you were raised in a home where you love the way you're raised and you feel you have great principles, then it could be that it will, because you already have the principles just built in. But if you didn't like the way you were raised and you're not happy with it, then it is crucial that you learn the topics, that you read books, that you discuss with people. Have people, families who you see as a model family, and go to them as mentors. There's no shame in this matter at all. It's a praise, it's a compliment. I see the raising of children very well. Can I take advice with you? My daughter's doing this, my son's doing this, my children are fighting. Just today someone came to me with a very interesting question. I'll share it just because it came out today. Their son is in grade 7 and he says he only wants to learn Gemara, he doesn't want to learn secular subjects anymore. So they started getting into a fight, the father and son. The son was saying, Torah is the only thing that's important. The father saying, math is important. And then the father, who's an Avreich, says, am I fighting against Torah? Like, what am I doing? I don't want to fight against Torah, but I believe in it as a principle. But my son is saying, like, holy things, Torah learning. And so what do I do? So we discussed it. I asked him, does your son love math? Just he loves Gemara more, and therefore he's thought it through and come up with a principle of Torah is the most important thing? Or is math actually very hard for him? Because no, he's terrible at math. Like, he really struggled with it the whole time. So I said, so if he would want to tell you, Dad, I hate math and I don't want to take math anymore, what would he rather say? Would he rather say, Dad, I'm failing at math? Or would he rather find another principle which his father probably would agree with him on and say, Torah, Torah, Torah! I have values, I have principles, I'm a man of Torah! I'm going to go to the door, I can't waste time with math! He was laughing. Of course he's going to say Torah. So I said, so let's say you get into a fight with him. He's saying Torah and you're saying maths. Are you going to get anywhere? You're totally missing the real issue. The real issue is he's struggling in math. The issue is not that he loves Torah so much that he doesn't have time for math. So hear him out, understand him, and then answer his real question. Don't even address the topic of Gemara. That's not the topic. Hear what the topic really is and address that. So say to him, math's hard for you. And he'll say, yeah. And he'll say, well, let's brainstorm together. Like, what can we do that math will be easier? Is another kid in the class or your friend who's a bit better at math? Do you want to do homework with him? Is the teacher have extra time? Should I speak to the teacher for you? Do you want me to get you a private tutor? Then he'll drop the whole irrelevant topic of Torah versus math, which is like a philosophical, irrelevant, external topic. And you can really address where he's holding. So there's no shame in discussing ideas. It's very beneficial. Find people who you wish to discuss things with and discuss it with them. Read books on the matter. But don't assume that you have it built in. It's not something automatic. It's not like breathing. It's like driving a car. There are principles that work. There are principles that fail. Many people use the principles that fail and suffer. And you don't need to suffer. And you're held accountable for causing suffering. So learn those principles. And within that point number 4, I just want to say one major, major, major principle. Which is not the only one, but it's just the one major one. But this is very much one of giving your children the ability to have an emotional openness or cut them off. So it's a primary one. The major time that a child and a parent develop a relationship is when a child has something that he wants to share with a parent, and how does the parent respond? If the parent responds in a way which doesn't address the child's inner need, then the child learns, I can't be open with my parents because they don't really get me. That's a very teenage phrase. My parents don't get me. And the parents may not get them because they give a response which is not what the child needed. But if the parents respond in a way that's authentic to the child's inner need, then the child will feel, I have here a soulmate, I have here someone I can trust. The child's major need, possibly only need that they have from the parent, is a sense of love and security. If a child grows up in a non-religious home with a sense of love and security, he will, and then he becomes a Baal Tshuva later on, he will be much more stable and close to Hashem, he has potential to be more stable and close to Hashem, than a child who grows up with a very Torah valued society where there's an emotional disconnect with the parents and the kids. He was given all the principles, he understands all the halacha, he knows all of Torah, he knows to tell you mistakes to show him Baal Peh backwards. Doesn't make a difference. He doesn't have the emotional connection. So then it's all external to him. It's a scary thing I'm saying now, but if you would ask me where I'd rather would have been raised, in a non-religious family, which is very healthy emotionally, or a religious family which is not healthy emotionally, I would choose the first. With the hope that I would end up returning to Torah. But at least there would be an Adam. There would be an Adam. Derech Eretz Kadma La Torah. There would be an Adam. And then that Adam can then develop into a Talmud Chacham. But if you have Torah without the Adam there, without any connection, without any emotion, then it's a shadow. It's a goyim. It's an external. It's a show. Chas v'shalom. I gave a very, very extreme, harsh expression of that. Those are the two extremes. Most people are neither extreme, but just to get the spectrum. That was a scary statement. I feel that it's true. How does a parent relate to a child in the inner world? How do they give that child a sense of security and love and stability through showing that they're in tune with their inner emotional world? The wrong way is to give advice. And parents see themselves as advice givers. My child knows less than me. They turn to me for guidance. I will advise them. Well, if I was you, I would do this and this. Yeah, but you're not me. You're you. And I don't want to be you. I want to be me. So advice is not so helpful. They definitely do not want rebuke. Why did you do that? Why didn't you do something else? The child comes home and has bought a gift for the parent. And a parent responds, why are you late? The parent said, the child with this gift and, I went to buy you a present. He says, yeah, but you should have told me that you were coming late. Okay, thank you very much. Broken the relationship. The child was trying to develop a relationship, and the parent, by giving rebuke, even though the parent is saying a good thing, I love you, I care for you, I was worried about you, I didn't know where you were. I love you and care for you so much that I was so worried that what I'm trying to tell you deeply is that I care for you and please let me know where you are because I love you and I care for you. When you're missing, it makes me worried. How does that deep emotional caring come out in words? Why didn't you tell me where you were? Now, the parent means good, but they don't express good. And the child doesn't hear the good inside. You have to be very insightful to hear the good inside. So there are wrong responses. There are responses of, you could learn from that, meaning you made a mistake. What can you learn from it? There's a list of at least 9 or 12 different approaches of wrong answers to give. There's one right response, which is empathy. Empathy means you just hear them out without any judgment, without any telling them what to do unless they are ready and asking you for guidance. You're not philosophizing about what could have been. You're not trying to say, oh, I know why this happened because of. You're not prophesizing. This means in the future this is going to happen. And nothing, nothing. All you are is with them. Imo anochi betzar. I'm with them. When the child knows that they can come home and they can share their emotions and they're not going to be attacked, and they're not going to be judged, and it doesn't mean anything for the future. It's just, this is where I am now. And you're with them. The child feels, I can share. I have a place to be. You as a parent can give your child the gift of makom. Makom. He has a makom. He can come home and he can share what's on his heart, and there's room for that. There's space for that. There's an emotional openness and an awareness. Now, the parent doesn't have to have the right answer. In fact, it's a much easier answer. It's much easier. Giving advice is hard. Rebuking is also hard. I mean, it's easy, but it's hard. I mean, it's like to say the right rebuke in a good way is hard. To not give any answer, but just to relay back to them what you understood of what they're feeling. Is this what you're going through? Let me see if I got it right. Is this what you're saying? Not to repeat their words like a parrot, but just like check in with them that this is what they're going through. And they'll say, yes, yes, someone here gets me. Someone understands me. And you didn't do anything. You did a lot. You opened your heart to them. You were emotionally available to them. And you were willing to take the time and the care to relay back what you understood of what they're going through. And if you get it wrong, but they sense that you care, they'll tell you. They go, no, that's not what I'm feeling. Let's say, for example, they come home all frustrated about something happened in school. And you say, you're really angry. And they go, I'm not angry, I'm just disappointed. And you go, oh, you're disappointed. And they go, yes. So it's fine if you get it wrong as well. As long as they understand and it's genuine that you're coming from a place of authentic wanting to feel what they're feeling and go through what they're going through, they will for life share with you what is the inner world. And if they're struggling with Yiddishkeit, they'll share with you. If they're struggling with emotions with their friends, they'll share with you. So principle number 4 was, don't assume that you have built in the skills for chinuch. It's something which has to be learned. You can learn it. It's easy to learn. The principles are few and easy to apply. But you have to have invested in them. And the major one is emotional availability. With giving empathy, which gives the child a sense of security and love. And then you're giving the child the opportunity to develop himself. I'm finished, and you're welcome to stop the recording if there is one, but I'm happy to take questions, if there are any questions.
I have one.
Yes.
When the whole thing of the extremes of Bindan and Smicha, when it comes to Smicha, you said the problem is that if you have no boundaries, there are no boundaries, and the child doesn't know what they like, then later in life they run into problems.
Even then,
outside of the home, it's like, well, they start running problems. Surely that's only a problem if everyone else in the world has some sort of guideline. As in, if the only problem is because their child is interacting with someone who has had guidelines and boundaries. But if everyone went to follow the same rule, you wouldn't have that problem because everyone else has come from a point where there are no guidelines, there are no boundaries. So you don't run into, they've run into a brick wall in that they don't know how to interact with someone because they've been brought up in a different way. So the problem isn't in that, the problem is that you haven't raised your child the same way as everyone else. How's that an intrinsic flaw in the system? It's a flaw in society, as it were.
It says in Pirkei Avos that you should always daven for the society that you live in, because without the society, then people will eat each other alive. If a person, that there are rules the Torah gives. The Torah's rules of if a person is narcissistic, and they only care about themselves, and they only do what they care about, they're going to run into difficulties with other people. It's going to be challenging for their life. It's going to be challenging for other people's lives. And it's going to be into the Torah's guidelines. Those guidelines aren't society. They're the Torah's guidelines. The Torah makes an ideal society, a model society, which it gives guidance for. And the parents' role is to raise those children along those lines. It could be that we could go to an animalistic world, where everyone just does whatever they want, and it's dog eat dog, and the survival of the fittest. And that would be a different model. But it's not the model that a close brother has planned for us and is guiding us towards. So our goal is to raise our child for the path of Torah, within which there's a lot of room for self-expression, and they can develop their own unique personalities, but still within the structure of the Torah that it gives. Any other questions?
Yeah. You said that a parent should not be giving advice as a first.
If the child asks for advice, they should give advice.
But if at the end of the day, a parent does have more life experience than the child, so the child's saying, I'm doing XYZ, and the parent realizes that it's in their life experience that doesn't work.
So they could open it as a discussion with the child. As a discussion with the child, bringing the child to a place that the child says, that makes a lot of sense, I want to do that. And then they can give their advice. Otherwise, this is what happens. Let's talk about an example of a child who sleeps in. So, I don't know why I'm giving an example, obviously. I'm guessing I'm not getting it. Okay, so someone's sleeping in. So the parent says, this is wrong, and this is going to ruin him for life. He's going to wake up late in yeshiva, he's going to wake up late for work, he's going to fail in many areas. I'm going to fix him, and I'm going to give him good advice about how to wake up on time. So now it becomes parent against child. Child says, I want to sleep in. Parent says, you must not sleep in, and it becomes a fight. Let's say the parent is able to enforce that the child will not sleep in. It will work as long as the parent has force over him. And the moment that the parent has no longer force over him, the child will do his own thing and probably go backwards. Because now he's his own person, he can do his own thing, and he'll rebel against the parent in a mini way, like of sleeping in. If you have a good relationship with a child, to the point where you hear them when they have issues, then they'll also hear you when you have issues. They'll be willing to really hear the guidelines that you have to say when they know that you take their opinion into account. If you're a parent who cares about what's important to them, even though to you it's trivial, then when you come and share what's important to you, they'll take it seriously. Because they know that you care about them, they'll care about you too. And then you say your idea of waking up on time, why it's valuable, they'll say, I hear that. And then you'll say, well, let's think together, let's brainstorm together. What do you think would be an idea that would work? And they'll come up with their idea of, I'm going to do Shnai Mikra before Shachos. That will give me like a feeling. My issue with davening is that I don't feel like connection to davening. I feel like I'm just wasting my time. I don't feel like getting up. But I do like learning. And I feel accomplished when I do Shnai Mikra. This is the child's own thought. And therefore the child says, I wake up early to do Shnai Mikra because that I have impetus to do. So I'll wake up for that. And then I'll be in davening already, so I'll continue. Now, the parent giving advice would give the wrong advice to the kid. The child comes up with his own idea, through the guideline of the parents, with the advice of the parents. It will come from a place of ratzon. The child has chosen it. So it's not that you should abandon your kids. If you see there's an issue, yes, get into a discussion, think about an idea, let him come with good advice, but then it'll be him choosing as opposed to you against him. You never want it to be that you're against the child. You want to be working with the child towards Hashem.
Even with that, there are still times where
there's a clash of ideals or there's a disagreement in terms of what the parent wants for the child. Like, the decision needs to be made, let's say, about like a certain summer camp or a certain high school. And the kid, he knows, he understands what the parent's point of view, but he just wants to go somewhere where might not be as from or as popular. And like, even if he understands the parent's point of view, if the parent doesn't force anything, then he just goes.
That's a very good example, and I want to discuss that for a second. Sometimes you have a clash where only one person can win, and it's one or the other. And they're not going to come to a mutual agreement right now. So first of all, know as a parent that you're doing damage. It's not your choice. The situation is doing damage. Whichever choice is going to be done, it's going to be damage done. And the parents have to look what long term is going to be more beneficial. Long term. If long term, this child is going to go to, let's say, a more frum school, which the parents have chosen for him, and the child will be upset about it initially, but from what they know of their child, the child will come to terms with it after a couple of months, and then he'll get in with the chevra, and then he'll say, I wish I would have gone there, but like long term he'll do well, and he'll be successful, and he'll find his place, and then long term he'll be happy that he went there. Then it's worth it. It's a clash, it's a fight, it's causing a bit of damage, but long term it's worth it. If they know their child's personality well enough, or where he's holding right now, that it's going to cause the opposite. He's going to fight till the bone. And he's going to like dafka not make friends, and he's going to dafka be a rebel, then it's not worth it. It'll be more beneficial long term for him to go to the less from school. Might not be their ideals, but with what they have right now, that's the best option. And therefore the parents have to be wise and know their child well, and ideally it comes through a discussion together. But yes, either way there's going to be damage there. So you have to see what was going to cause long term benefit more. And there's no one right answer. It depends on the school, the situation, the kid, what's going to happen. You have an example?
Is a child relating to the parent, at what point are you supposed to start taking into, like, are you supposed to start realizing these ideals in, like, the opposite perspective? I mean, like, your parent is trying to, let's say you understand your parent is trying to give you advice. How are you supposed to go about addressing that? Because you were saying, as a parent, we're looking at it as a parent, you shouldn't be giving advice, you should more be guiding, I would say. How are you supposed to look in the opposite direction as a child?
Right, that's also a very problem. So there we have clear halachic guidelines on that, which is that there's a chiyuv of kibud av, an aim, and you do not have to listen to them if they're taking your life on a different path, that it's not the path you take. If they tell you to marry someone you don't want to marry, you don't have to listen to them. If they tell you to go into a profession, which is not the profession you want to go into, you don't have to listen to them. They tell you to learn one yeshiva and you want to learn a different yeshiva and you feel better if you don't have to listen to them. There are guidelines, which are halacha states. So you should take their advice if it's not harming you or setting you off track in a major way. But otherwise, you have to listen to what they say because you have a chiyuv of kibura. It's very different each way. Parents have to be super empathetic, the kids have to listen. Doesn't work both ways. Any other questions? We'll sing the Zakeni the Gadda and then we'll part. Zakeni legader banim uvnei banim chachamim udevonim ayayayayay adei Hashem yirei Elokim ayayayayay anshei emes Hashem Dveikim Zakeini Legadel Banim Uvnei Banim Chachamim Unevonim Yadei Hashem Yirei Elokim Zerakodesh Bashem Dveikim Umeir Vesolom Azora Umasim Tovim Uvechom Ilechez Avodas Aborim Umeir Vesolom Sim tovim, uvechom
Avoda Sabore. Umeir Masala, Batarau Masim Tovim. Umechom Melaches Avoda Sabore.
Tzadikim, tzadikos,
Mm-hmm.